I read an interesting article recently that Cybersecurity Agency of Singapore is reviewing its National Cybersecurity Act. And this time it includes non-critical information infrastructure. This is a very big change compared to what they have in 2018. Would anyone be able to share some thoughts on this?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Security Lah Podcast, Season 2.
The Cybersecurity Act of Singapore came into force on 31st of August 2018, which is about what? 19, 20, 21, 22, 4 years ago, and not bad. They've actually started thinking about revising the Act, which shows that they're quite up to date with the challenges that's happening. And I guess they've realized that things change, the cyber world changed. In fact, with the recent invasion and war, things completely changed. And countries now have to start looking at all these aspects so that they can keep themselves abreast with new threats that's coming in. So I'm just going to go through some points, and probably Nigel, you can come in and help me a little bit on this. The interesting fact that you highlighted is that there is a focus shift from just CII, which is the critical information infrastructure, into CII plus non-CII. And the shift is happening because they're seeing that you don't just look at an infrastructure because it's part of a particular sector. You look at today's services that spans across the board. You may have a service that's hosted on a cloud that's dependent to other critical services. So for example, Singapore has SingPass, which is the single sign-on capability by the government. You can use SingPass to open a company, open a bank account, and do multiple of these kind of services. So this infrastructure, if you look at it, has interconnectivity and is very much intertwined into a lot of other services and maybe even applications in order for an average citizen to be able to conduct his or her business or their business. So in that instance, the current act isn't sufficient to cover this huge array of ecosystem. So that's one of the things that I find quite interesting in the Cybersecurity Act. The next one is looking at how they could update the code of practice. In the Cybersecurity Act, there's a framework for them to designate CII, CII owners, and they had defined 11 critical sectors that needs to comply with cyber hygiene. And we know probably until as of yesterday, everybody's talking about meeting the minimum baseline in order for you to stay secure. But today, we all realize that you are a fair target to anyone and everyone. Whether you're a mom and pop shop, or you're a kopitiam down the street, or you're a chain of supermarkets, or you're a large organization, it is irrespective what business you are in. And if you look at it, even humanitarian organizations such as ICRC had a cyber attack. Having that in mind, what I feel is that Singapore government and CSA is now looking at saying that it's no longer enough for you to just meet bare minimum requirements. And they've also started recognizing, for example, in 2019, they came up with a set of mandatory OT or operational technology specific cybersecurity practices. These are systems that would manage your utilities, for example, your power generation systems, your hydroelectric dams, and all this infrastructure that runs on a special category of computing clusters. And these are not your typical computers that we use or servers that we see in data centers. Just they're slightly unique. And recognizing that these kind of infrastructure requires special care, CSA Singapore, as well as the Singapore government, has now come up with this requirement in 2019. That's just step one. Now what they are saying is it's no longer enough for you to meet bare minimum. You have to now take one step further up and start looking at how you're going to meet the requirements that may be specific to your industry. So for example, if you're in oil and gas, there may be specific requirements for you to ensure that the cybersecurity readiness is up to date. Because the typical approach most organizations will take is, okay, I just need to know what is the bare minimum. I will meet the bare minimum and I'm done. Because security is cost for a lot of organizations. They don't seem to want to go to deeper state of security, but they would say that if the industry requires A, I will keep it at A. So to give you an example, the OCBC phishing incident that happened in Singapore, OCBC actually had plans to remove their manual tokens, the tiny little calculator device that you have that generates the one-time PIN. After the incident, they realized, yeah, you know, while there's going to be a lot more friction, which we've seen after the incident, they said, you know what, security is more important and we are going to make sure that we retain that manual OTP generation device. So these kind of things change.
One of the things I like about this revision is it's a quote and unquote risk-based approach based on the same article that I've read. And as we all know, one of the specific features of cyber attack is uncertainty. It's almost very difficult to pinpoint the attacker. And this actually provides incentives for states to qualify cyber threats as national security threats. And then they actually will establish mechanism to deal with these threats. For what Singapore is doing now is definitely a proactive manner to enhance its reactive capabilities. And they are looking at containment and sustainability capabilities. So I would be interested to see how this one pans out. I understand that the review is expected to complete only in 2023, if I'm not mistaken.
Enjoying the show so far? Subscribe now so that you don't miss out on the latest episode. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. Visit podcast.securitylaw.asia to get the links to subscribe.
You're absolutely right. And we've seen Singapore taking leaps and bounds into digitalization, turning their citizen lifestyle into a fully integrated digital economy. And I guess that also has its pros and cons, cyber being one of the key issues that needs to be addressed. So as such, like what I mentioned earlier, you're going to have systems that are going to be hosted in cloud. They're going to have personal information, maybe even credit card information, transactional information. Hence, the scope of the act now goes up and beyond into the virtual realm of the cloud. Because as we all know, cloud is no longer location specific. If you're using one of the big cloud providers, your data may be traveling across different data centers to ensure that your data is always available. So in that instance, data sovereignty is going to be an issue because we really don't know in which territory the data resides. It may reside securely, it may be encrypted. Only the application owner has access to the keys that's going to decrypt the data, yet that data now resides somewhere else. Hence, there has to be sufficient protection to ensure that your digital initiatives that you put into place, your journey towards the cloud, both by government and private agencies, remain secure. And the act now gives you a little bit of teeth for you to do something about it. And that's going to be interesting because when you talk about cloud, where your data is always going to be an enigma. No one would know where it is today at this point of time. For example, I host my personal email with Google for the longest time until very recently they decided to charge me Thank you, Google. They've been hosting my stuff for 16 years for free, but now they've decided to charge. But, you know, if you ask me, where is my email stored? I say Google. But if someone were to ask me, where's your email really stored? I have no idea. It's probably somewhere around the world. And only Google would actually know where my emails are actually sitting. And today, I don't have a mechanism or even law that's going to help me do that. And I'm guessing that Singapore has identified this as going to be a future challenge going digital. And they're going to put in some requirements. And the issue with cybersecurity laws is that the minute when you touch things that are beyond the virtual realm, it's going to expand into cross-border issues. So be it, for example, if you're trying to track a Bitcoin transaction or NFT or any one of the new technologies, or let's not go so far. We go into metaverse. You are in a virtual realm. The realm you're in can be any part of the world physically in a data center. You won't know that. But as far as you are concerned, as a user, you're just interfacing with the computer. So that's going to be an interesting take about how Singapore sees it, what they recognize it to be, and how it's going to go in. And that's the other thing that I noticed is that they want to look at emerging threats and new technologies. So emerging threats would be stuff like ransomware. Not really emerging, it's been there for some time. Or even, for example, new technologies like 5G. And I'm very sure that, hopefully, fingers crossed, maybe they might come up with some regulations around metaverse, NFT, crypto. So let's wait and see whether they have some thought around those.
I'm glad you brought up the virtual assets because, there was actually mention of securing digital infrastructure beyond critical information infrastructure. And there was also mention of needing to be able to secure virtual assets. And to be honest, I was actually thinking of exactly that, the metaverse kind of elements, cryptocurrencies, bitcoins, digital currencies. Yeah, this has to be looked at as well. They're not exactly here yet, but the time to start is now.
Interestingly, just very late last year, the Monetary Authority of Singapore announced that they are starting to look at a central bank digital currency.
Yes.
And even Malaysia, for example, actually mentioned about CBDC, which is the retail central bank digital currency.
Yeah.
I guess the whole world is moving towards this. Mm-hmm. And maybe this document may give us some highlights into how the digital currency is going to work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It has to do with Project Ubin, I think, which is spearheaded by MAS, if I'm not mistaken, along with some other private organizations as well.
I guess that's probably an idea for another episode that we want to do, which is about talking about digital currencies, CBDCs, how cyber plays a part in it. And you know, maybe by then, if the circular or the act is out, we could actually center around some of the thoughts that Singapore has put in. Because we see within the at least the Southeast Asian region that Singapore tends to lead in some of these initiatives. So let's wait and see if they come up with something interesting that we could probably latch on.
Yeah, look forward to that.
Thanks for joining us this week on Security Lab. Make sure to visit our website at securitylab.asia, where you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss a show.